Okay, so how did this talk come about, and you know, why am I a lazy coder? Well, basically, over time, I've learned I'm sick of doing the same job over and over again. I hate repetitive work. I'd rather spend the effort at the start of a project, the start of a job, start of a task, do that, and then come back and, you know, have more time when the actual project or the task is run. So kind of more work at this end, but less time overall to get a task completed. And one of the things I've learnt, as I said, this is not an easy thing. I mean, it is hard work being lazy, because you have to actually plan, you have to learn some stuff, but once you get it in your head, you understand what's going on, the next time you do this particular job, this task, or what have you, it'll, be much shorter. Okay, over the years, I've used a lot of things for, like I said, being lazy. Over previous years, I've talked about things like Dreamweaver and Fireworks and Flash and batch processing and the like. This leads into it. Not going to talk about that today. What I do use and what I'm going to look at today are some key ones. I'm going to look at just Ant. I'll get to what these tools are in a moment. But look at Ant. A thing called Confluence. A thing called Jenkins. And some of you might be going, what the hell is Jenkins? I'll get to that in a moment. Regular expressions. And just want to point this out. If you're a non-coder, don't be scared. A lot of this stuff is more to show you what can be done, as opposed to, I need to know this stuff right now. Subversion. Oh, and that was it. There was actually, I think in my original blurb, I did mention Jira and Balsamiq. Just due to time and also issues with my machine, they've been removed. So I don't want to focus on it right now. It's a sad tale. I do spend I'm fortunate that I actually managed to get a brand new desktop at home this year, so I had an old one sitting there. I've actually migrated a lot of my stuff to Ubuntu, just an old computer, very low end. It's a great way of getting started in a lot of the tools I'm using, but the important thing to note is that most of them are cross-platform. You can do it Linux, you can do it on Mac, you can do it on Windows. Okay, so I said for this, I'll be doing it in Windows, and many of the apps I'm actually running, my licenses are for Linux, so I won't be able to run those. I'm just running the Windows trial versions. It's important to note how you get them on the computer or on your server is different. Linux is actually incredibly easy for this sort of stuff. Windows can be messy because of permissions and the like. But the point is, once you've got it up and running, what I'm doing today is pretty much the same no matter what platform you're using. Okay, and as I said, the stuff I'm going to cover can be quite deep, and I could spend the entire 50 minutes on Ant if I wanted to. Like, you can go very deep, so I'm not going to show you how to install it, except for one part. And again, as I mentioned before, these are a taste of what you can do. All right, let's start with the first one. And the reason I've moved this one to the front is because I am running the demo, and I found out the demo takes about 10 minutes to start. Okay, at least on my machine, so I'm not going to question it. I just rearranged it. Okay, so this is actually more of the non-coding side of things, just more to help me out. If you're the sort of person who writes stuff down on post-its or, I should write that down in a blog so I remember it next time, that type of thing, an application like Confluence will actually make your life easier. And basically, it's just a wiki. You've used Wikipedia. You know how that sort of stuff works. Honestly, it's more powerful than Wikipedia. I'm going to show you in a moment. That's their blurb from their website. So, it's a place to collaborate. So if you're working by yourself, it's a great way of managing information. If you're working in a team, it's a brilliant way of managing information. Okay, and of all the stuff I'm showing today, it's the only one that actually costs money. The good thing is you can get a 10-user license for $10, and that $10 goes to charity. So it's not a bad way to start. I actually did a deal and got the whole suite for $70 and You know, I can now play around with it with a small group of people. It's very easy to get up and running. So I'm just going to duck out of here for a sec and find the right one. That's it. So, as I said, I'm actually running evaluation. The great thing is there are 30-day trials, and also you can get special licenses and the like. So I'm just going to fire it up. It's a browser-based application. You can customize it, by the way, if your company wants to have your own look and feel. Go and tweak it. I mean, for me, it's for me, so I don't care. And just because it's my demo, I've stripped out everything but a few items just to show you sort of how I use it. All right, so the idea is... I'll just... don't want to follow myself, so... There we go. I had the wrong page. So I've just mocked up a simple welcome page. Now, this is the idea behind this is more if you're in a team. I'm in a group of 10 people or a company of 15,000, like I was last time. You know, you can actually dedicate a whole page to yourself and have information. You can actually present it as a web page, as a blog style, even newsletter style if you really wanted to. You can actually follow people. It's quite interesting. How I use it is actually just for us to keep notes and keep things organized. So I want to, you know, I need to remember some really useful SQL statements. So, you know, I go in here and just create a link to that particular item. I can go look it up. Okay, so let me just zoom up a bit so you can read it if you actually care about the SQL. So, you know, top of my head, I'm trying to remember how in SQL Server do I get all the tables in the current database, or how do I get details on a particular table in the database. You know, stuff I might just write down somewhere, jot it down in a notebook or what have you, but just have it one central location to come back to and look it up. As far as adding information to this, let me just see if I can zoom back out, but going too far. It's editable. It's meant for you to go in there and change things. Important to note, it is actually user-based, so if you've got information that's delicate, you can lock it down. So I actually use it for storing all my site details. I mean, who actually has to keep going back through the emails to find the FTP details and the username and the password and that sort of thing? I have it all in one location. It's password protected. Don't have to look for it again. I know where to find it. So if I need to go through and make a small change, all I do is click this wonderful little edit button. You can work in a WYSIWYG editor. Actually find their wiki markup to be very simple, just straight text with combination of characters to create bullets and tables and the like. Once you get a hang of it, it's actually much faster to work this way. You probably saw that my code was actually code formatted just to make things easier. It just uses metadata wrapped around your examples, be it XML, SQL, Java, ActionScript, and it will just highlight, color code it, etc. You know, I need to use that particular bit of code from the regular page. I can just highlight, copy and paste it into SQL Server Studio, something like that. Okay, so just one final thing here. And where is it? Up here. As I said before, you can create web pages, you can create blog posts. It's quite easy to go through and add in external content. I can embed Flash movies, YouTube clips, you know, if that helps. Here's how to disassemble your Droid 2 mobile phone and embed the YouTube video straight into the page. So that sort of thing is actually rather useful. Let me just go back for 1 second to the original link I sort of mocked up. If I can find, wrong. There we go. This is a few minutes' work. I'm kind of going to discuss this today, obviously, with Ant and the like. But I had to remind myself, but this is actually something I did for a job. You know, someone's coming on board. How do they get Oracle? Sorry. Yeah, it's Oracle now, isn't it? Sun, Oracle, Java. Keep changing names. So how do I get Java on the machine? How do I get Ant? So just quickly, I can embed links to where to download the latest files, put little notes and comments to myself. I can embed, just literally point to file, upload it. It automatically generates the images for you. And there's your, if it wants to work. Yeah, demo gods are not going to be nice. Let me try one more, and if it doesn't work. You've seen what happens. It just zooms up and shows you the particular image. Yeah, they're not going to be nice. Something's funky on this machine, so I'm not going to play around with it. But you can see I can go through and, you know, I can embed anything I want into these. I mean, for myself, overkill. But if you're in a team, you know, you're the guy that's responsible for getting everybody's workstation up to spec. That's great. You can go and do it on this machine. But what if you're away on holidays or, you know, you leave the company? They've got a record of how to do it. So it's easy to set up and go from there. All right. So that's Confluence. That's all I'm going to spend on that, really. It was just more of a the slow fade. I love that when I hit the wrong button. I've already mentioned the stuff, rich text editing. Yeah, and just no more post-its, which is always handy. All right, so that was the totally non-programming side of things. Here's a little bit of programming just to scare you or to entice you into making your life a lot easier. Who's not heard of regular expressions? Okay, who doesn't use it? Who's never used it? Okay, just out of fear, like as in never looks too scary to play around with, or no, everyone's just going to shrink in the background, okay? look, honestly, I avoided regular expressions for so long because it just looks terrifying when you see some huge script to compare an email. Simplest thing, though, it's just a way of matching strings. Regular expression, it's a language like SQL. It's just a structure. It's got a set of rules. How you write it. You find it everything. Your text editors have it for doing find replace. Eclipse and Dreamweaver has it built in. I'm going to show you a demo on Dreamweaver, which hopefully will make you want to use it more. And it's built into languages like ColdFusion and ActionScript 3. You know, I can do a lookup and validation of a field being entered and say I must match these characters, this order, these combinations. You know, in the past you'd have some sort of complex if-then-else statements or just one single line of characters. Okay, and file systems. So you can get it on file systems as well. Okay, I'll put these up now, but I'll have these links later on. There's two places I just want to mention. One is regular-expressions.info. If you actually just Google regular expressions, I think it's like the second or third link down in most times I've looked for it. I'm not sure why the first one keeps coming up. It doesn't sort of relate. And the other one is, I've just made this last night, just a shortcut. By the way, do you ever know that if you actually use bit.ly and embed an Adobe address, it makes it Adobe-ly? So I didn't do that. It actually did it automatically. So there's certain companies that must just have a agreement with. DW Regex, Dreamweaver Regex. I just made a shortcut. It's to a two-part tutorial on using it in Dreamweaver. And it's kind of what I'm doing today, but just in expanded mode. All right, and I'll bring those links back up at the end as well. Okay, so here's the scenario. A client's come back to you. They've got a menu in their restaurant page. And it's just something simple. What they want to do is look at that, okay, which is, you know, the list of entrees. And the point I'm doing this, you could do this by click and drag and updating it within Dreamweaver. But if it's three items, who cares? If it's 1,000 items, I'm not doing that. So what they want to do is every word basically before the hyphen, actually it's technically a space, hyphen, space, I want to go through and wrap a new set of tags around that or new span and style with it. So just looking at the HTML before, if you can read that, there's just nothing there. So what I want to do in the end, I want to end up with, is looking like that. It's just the first parts are bolded for those who can't see at the side. And it's just, you know, as I said, I'm just taking a simple span and wrapping around those items. All right. So let's have a look at, let's have a look at this. So let me flick, and I've shut it down by mistake. One second. Gotta remember, leave it running. And funny enough, I use this keyboard because that one, the key I need doesn't work. I must have run over something bad. I'm not sure what. All right. So here, as I mentioned, that's the original HTML. And in the code, I think most of you can read that clear enough. You can see it. That's what just what I showed you. I mean, obviously, what I showed you was a small chunk of it. There's more in that particular page. Okay, so regular expressions in Dreamweaver. All I do is bring up the find box, and it's preloaded, of course, so it takes away the mystery. Remember what I did last time I was here? Okay, I'm just going to step through it just for the mean benefit of time, so just let me zoom up here. There we go. I've got to keep the mouse in one spot so it doesn't move. There we go. All right, so I assume most of you use Dreamweaver. You have used it. This has been in Dreamweaver since version 0, probably. It's always been around the regex, as far as I'm aware. Okay, so just a quick explanation for those who haven't seen it before. What's going on here? Okay, for the time being, just ignore the brackets. The parentheses around these sections. I'll come back to what they are in a moment. What it's just saying here is match a literal string. Look for angle bracket li, then look for any number of characters but the closing bracket. So if I just go into here quickly, actually, it might be easier if I just do this. Sorry. It's always better when you see some cool demo happening than someone trying to describe it to you. All right. So if I do that, you just go away. Cool. So if I just hit find next, there we go. So that first bit of code just says, look for the li, look for any number of characters, the asterisks, as long as those characters are not, that's the caret symbol, are not the closing bracket. All right, then I want to look for a closing bracket. So let me just find the next one of those. Oh, look, it's actually picked that up. Okay, in addition to that, what I want to do is look for any number of characters, basically up into the, up into the next closing bracket. So I'm just going to do the same thing again. So closing angle bracket, again, any number of characters. Let me just hit another find. It's actually done most of the line. I won't scroll across. It's actually done the entire tag up to the closing tag, except for the angle bracket. But I don't want that. What the client wants is, we'll see where it says roasted tomato soup --, --. I want to match that. So I'm just going to go --, --. Let me find that. There we go. So let's match that. That's all well and good. So that's a much easier way of not knowing how many characters to match in between. I know what to start with, know what to end with, know what should be in the middle. I can go through and tweak that and match that. So in this particular case, what I'm going to do is, this is where the keyboard comes in because it's not working. And, okay, so this is my first match. I want to treat these as a group of characters. I want to treat these as a group of characters, and I want to treat that --, --, as a group of characters. Now, when I do the find and reply, the find, it'll make no difference. It'll still match up that same set. What it tells Dreamweaver is these are now groups. I want that first group, so find that first content, the first bracket, and put it at the front. Then add span class equals dish name. So that's the bit I want to wrap the dish name in. Then take the second match, which is actually, in this case, summer salad. Put that in the middle, close the span off, and then put the rest of that line at the end. So if I just hit replace now, it's gone through and done that. And of course, I would just hit replace all, and you know, within seconds, I've just gone through and done that entire page. So if I look back here, let me zoom back out so I can see the whole page. Go back to design. There's that page with that stuff highlighted. So it's just a simple example, but radical expressions in you know whatever application you're using, whether it's find and replace or validation of credit cards or what have you, will make your life a lot easier. It can be intimidating at first, but it's definitely worthwhile looking at. All right, so let's go back from there. All right, so it says kind of all over the place because there's lots of little bits and pieces to make use of. Okay, so I assume most of you are using version control of some sort, or at least have dealt with it. Okay, just for those who don't, it's basically version control is just a way of backing up and ability to restore your data. When I'm working by myself, it's actually still convenient for me to use this system because I know I've done things late at night where I've deleted the wrong file by mistake or I've overwritten something, hit save and gone, you know, it's too late to get it back. If you're in a team, even better. I've worked in teams where literally I'm working side by side on ActionScript and, you know, my code's being worked on uploaded and someone else is working on almost the same file, you know, and to be able to, the ability to stop overwrites, stop conflicts, you know, I upload my version, they upload their version and my version's gone. This helps to maintain and prevent that. So it's actually really simple to set up. Again, I'm going back to the Linux side of things, it's incredibly simple to set up. On Windows, it's actually downloading a application. I use one called Visual SVN. If you actually Google that, just Visual SVN. It will actually set up a repository for you. You can set up on a remote computer or local. The beauty of it is it actually is, if you say install even on your C drive, it's probably not the best idea. You can actually physically pick up the repositories and just back them up. Just do a physical move them somewhere if you need to make a copy of them. Okay. There are different types. They work on, again, all operating systems. There's Subversion, there's Git, there's Mercurial, if you're source safe. I won't go through what the pros and cons are, except to say, you know, some of the open source, most of them are free. Some work better in certain environments. If you're always on a plane traveling, things like Git and Mercurial work much better because you can kind of version control within yourself and then come back to the main repositories later on, merge them together.
Hopefully, this is actually real-time processed audio through the computer. There we go. So, simple concept, but yeah, here we go. Simple jam app. I wish I was waving my hands instead of clicking the mouse button, but hopefully when the Flex, the SDK for the Kinect comes out, we'll be able to merge those two and be able to sit on your couch and just say, play me a blues track.
But will it be out for Mac?
Yeah, we'll be out for Mac.
It won't be out for Mac, for sure.
So moving right along now, obviously Ray's totally into guitars. As I said, I'm into drones and tech and other bits and pieces as well. So you've probably been noticing that thing over there for a little bit. So I'll just get into some background of it pretty quickly. We're about halfway through, I think. Basically, this whole idea from Effect started off with a client project. We wanted to be able to interact with the client's customers and whomever visits a venue and just be able to have, you know, close interaction with them. And just to be able to have multiple low-cost devices moving around the room autonomously. And that's pretty much the brief. I've been working with Arduino technology. The Arduino looks something very similar to this. It's just a piece of hardware, lots of inputs and outputs on it. It's got a small microcontroller and processor on it, and you can put code on it to do things. So of the code, once it's on there, you just plug on the power and you don't need much more. They can be extended and advanced to networking, Wi-Fi, and various other sensors that you can put on them. So it makes an ideal prototyping platform to put something like this together. So I was heavily into Arduino, and then out came NetDuino, which is the Microsoft micro framework version of the same thing. The Microsoft Robotics Framework is actually a more complete programming platform other than Arduino. I love my processing, don't get me wrong, but I love my Arduino and my Java, but realistically, if you can just press debug and then hit a sensor and watch it breakpoint to a debug on a sensor from a piece of hardware, that's just sweet. So basically, that allows you to get into this device really quickly. So you can write the most simplest things from, you know, MP3 encoders, whatever you want. They also come with SD card capability as well. So why a blimp? Well, I don't like quadcopters. Sorry. So quadcopters, you lose your hands. They've got to continuously be powered. And just the real-time processing required for having it just move around the machine. It's also not very friendly to people. You know, we've seen plenty of demos of them. And this thing's called Bob, is the project. Bob's actually, it's an autonomous drone. And built into it is a complete guidance system. It's got an altitude heading reference system built into it. And I've got some maths I can show you. It's also got some pathfinding capability built into it, like an A-star algorithm. So once it establishes its environment, then it's able to simply move around that environment all by itself. So I just need to tell it where to go. Obviously, I can't stick a Kinect on that because it's too heavy. But I can stick lasers on it, such like this, very heavy laser user. So you can buy these things pretty cheaply. That's about $4. And they're non-destructive to people. So you can essentially establish an environment and move around inside of it with good telemetry. There is this visualization. It's got a basic AI on it, so it knows if it's going to hit something, blah, 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 blah. And it streams data. But at the end of the day, that's a piece of hardware. And it also offers me this nice immediacy as well, because it's actually doing something real time, and it involves me. So again, let's look at the hardware. This is the demo edition of the same thing. So I've got to get this thing on a plane, get through, you know, some check-ins and not be, you know, rested like last time. So basically, with the NetDuino, the centerpiece, that's the brain. It's got this piece of programming logic on it that's written in .NET that's actually sitting there interpreting all of the processes, making stuff happen. On top of it, I'm using a communications protocol called XB and XBGPS. So there's these two little devices, and I'll show you some pictures, but basically it's a Wi-Fi style framework that hooks my laptop to that thing over there. And we can transact in a socket way. So going back to our playlist, this was a socket-based device. This is a socket-based device. You are not. So the other thing that it includes is 9 degrees of freedom. So basically, it's something like what your iPhone has. It can determine where it is in space and if it's upside down, left, right, and center. It's got the ability to control all the ICs. It's got a servo. It's got some thrusters. It can have an optional sonar on it. And it's got some serious-ass helium. Don't breathe in helium, common cause of asphyxiation in Australia. So, oh yeah, I'm great. Oh, wait a minute, I have a puffer. I'm dead. So basically, the 9DOF contains a magnometer, accelerometer, and a gyroscope all in one. That thing's about $90, and you can buy it from any old electronics store. My favorite place is Little Bird Electronics. I'll plug in a bit later. And you can, that comes to your door. It's about this big. It's not huge. But essentially, that's basically a Wii remote right there. The magnometer is obviously it's a compass. Accelerometer is how fast you're moving away from a particular central point, and the gyroscope is obviously your position in 3D space. So combine all those things together, some really awesome mathematics. So directional cosine matrix and Kalman filtering, and you're able to work out your place in the world. So you can actually say, I am here above this table, I am so many degrees below, so many degrees above, and I'm moving at this rate and so on. So you can have computers process that in real time and do something about it in advance. The other pieces of hardware are really about the communication. So there's an XB, as I said, and that's just a wireless framework for transacting information over a radio. These things go to 50 meters, they can go to a kilometer. They're that good. They're also used as a basis for a lot of drone machinery out there. I don't think it's like what the military use, but it's for you know, amateur guys who want to have a bit of, you know, Wi-Fi with a bit of serial communications. The XB GPS, that's a full-on GPS, like any other GPS. It doesn't do too much other than that. It talks to the XB, and there's a bit of programming that does it. The heart of it is the NetDuino. It's got a data logger, it's got networking, it's got the Microsoft .NET Robotics framework on it, and it's what it's doing is just spinning in a loop, analyzing all of the sensors, and then punching that information back up onto basically a serial port and telling me all about it. Then it gives me the opportunity to react. I can then say, no, do these things, and then it tells the sensors what else to do. So then I got this radio control style interaction. There's a H-bridge on the back there, which is you see on the right-hand side to you. Was it left? That's basically just there for controlling servos. It's pretty straightforward. And that's just a servo, and that's what moves it up and down. So what's the hookup? How do I make this all work as one piece? Basically, it's the same as what we've been doing throughout all of the presentation. We have a wireless way of communicating or some way of communicating with the device. We've got some drivers in between me and the device, and then we've got some socket communication. And then we're using air to really real-time process information that's coming back off this technical piece. Oh, crap. So here we go for some dangerous stuff. It's not going to punch your eye out or whatever. So what I'm doing now is just going to unleash it for a bit. I'll just bring up So basically, I'm just putting in the power. Powering it on. I've got a little button in the back here to reset it, and that's reset. The program's now loading back onto the chip, and off we go. So is that floating? Do I need to? That's looking pretty good.
Start the server?
Yeah, what we'll do is bring up XTU. So I've got a COM program here just to prove it. It is doing what it's doing. Now, to me, I've got a comparable XB, so that's the thing that's allowing me to talk to it. And then over in that machine is the brother, and that's what's talking to it. So let's bring him to the center. There's good. So I've got a little tool here that allows me to talk to the XBs themselves. And it's just a terminal-based application, so let's give that a reset. Come on, baby. There we go. So what we're seeing on screen is some real-time feedback and information from that thing over there. So what you're seeing is the GPS string, and you can use NMEA coding and whatever. I've been on stage with GPS before, and it doesn't work because I'm obviously in a building. So that's why you're seeing 9999s there on the location piece. Yes, I can read that as it's going. I know what it says. Not only that, it's passing back to me the DOF information. So as I move it up and down, the DOF information, the degrees of freedom, is telling me if it's going from left to right, up, down, and so on. So I can let it sit there. But as I said, I can pump commands to it so I can punch the device and make it move. And then I can do an all forward and an all back. I could do right to left, and so on. So I won't tempt fate much. So basically, you get the idea of how this thing works, obviously. So what we're going to do is start up a socket server written in .NET and talk to that thing. So we've got a socket server now started up. If you just want to bring it to...
Yeah.
It up. So coming back to Potomac, we've written a Potomac application, written a separate bundle, separate module in my own little land, and I just gave it to Ray and said, could you put that into that thing, please? And here it is. So basically, we've got the DOF information coming up, and we've got some really cool developer art, so we can go and all... bring him back. Right. Turn off the drone debug. What you can see is the drone debug in there, and that's the same information coming now back into a Flex application. I'll just turn off the drone debug. Where'd you put that?
your own debug.
Yeah, just the tracing. So Raze is going to go in and turn off some drone debug information for us. So what I'll show you is just pressing some flex buttons and moving it about. The
that
next
one? No op.
That's the one. No op. Yeah, get rid of the no op. Run again. It's surprisingly hanging quite well. The amount of helium inside of that thing, basically the balloon, a good story is I had to communicate with a lot of people around Brisbane to help me out with designs of different technologies. Like this one's a latex, you can use a mylar, a foil, and plastic. And then you can get them built to spec. This thing here is just an edge away from weather balloon. It's about a $140 balloon, that thing. It takes roughly 0.6 meters cubed of helium to fill it, which is roughly around $70 a blow, literally, to put that thing up into the air. Reason I chose helium, obviously it's an inert, so it doesn't blow up. You know, you don't get the usual problems with blimps, of course. So we can avoid those sorts of tragedies. So raised us to hooking us back up, and we're getting back into our dashboard here. So hopefully we get an all forward. Oh, all stop. All stop.
Watch out for the fire.
Watch out for the fire.
Should we go backwards?
Here we go. So this is demo wear. All right. Let's move on. I think we're convinced that it's a working thing. So the next piece here is obviously a dashboard for the drone, because you get that it works. This is what I call extension of me. So this particular demonstration involves that thing, the Kinect. So I wanted the drone to work with the Kinect. So let's just make that happen. We bring it over. So I'll just bring up the Kinect server. So that's providing us the socket for us to listen to and talk to the Kinect. We'll bring up the socket server.
The characters to ASCII, and then take off. If it's the first character, do nothing. The second one, take off one. Third, fourth, and convert back to the characters. You'll actually get the password. The reason I know this is because I Googled it, and it was really easy to find. Anyway, this is what it looks like, and just with some wild cards in place. Okay, but you know that bit I said, I need to go through and work out that whole ASCII trick? Well, and also supports JavaScript. So you can actually put JavaScript in here that's just doing all that work of converting to hex and back again and doing the calculations for me. All right, and usual stuff, you know. On my file, I want to cloak these folders, and I don't want this. I'm also saying, where is the server, and where is the external site? I'm running out of time, so I'll talk much faster now. And then the rest is downloading files. As I said, these will be published. You can scan through them and see yourself. Let's just see what this is actually going to do. And again, just to prove I'm not doing anything dodgy here, give me a name of a site.
Google.
All right. My site name is Google. As you can see, I didn't bother hiding the part. I just went password for today, so to keep it nice and simple. So I've got four parameters. The site name, username, password, and where the latest build of jQuery UI. I hope they haven't moved it since last night. All right. So I'm going to save that. And from the command prompt, I'm just going to go to that folder. And I've made a batch file. All the batch file does is call the AND script. So I'm just going to go create. All right, creating the folders. It's actually now checked in a repository. It's now downloading the jQuery UI. Or jQuery UI. It's I'm extracting it. It's moving to the right location, making the STE file, doing some cleanup for me. 19 seconds. So I've done all that. My last step is go to Dreamweaver. All right. Manage sites. Import. Google. Done. There is the site built with all the scripts ready to go. And just to prove that everything is working properly, if I go into the settings here, site name, local site, the server location, version control with password, and it's supposed to be connecting. There you go. So subversion's working. So if I do a lot of websites, I can build some really cool scripts and just go through and automate tasks. And you can put conditionals, if-then statements, and you know, modify. You could obviously, I've got passwords in plain text. There's ways to obscure them, that sort of thing. Okay, is that cool? No. Cool. Okay. All right, so we've done that one. Okay, so again, why would I care about Ant that much? That sort of thing. Well, I've got other tools as well that I use. So jump into Flash Builder. When you actually click on the compile button or the run button or the debug button inside of Flex Builder, you're running Ant. It's just built into Eclipse. So, and I should clarify that. When I said before, it's built in. Flash Builder 4 and higher, I think 3 is still to download as an additional element. So with Ant inside of here, you can do a variety of things. So, you know, instead of just hitting the run button, instead I can go into here, and this is actually a really simple version. When it comes up, so finish thinking about it, there we go. So first of all, here is the file I'm going to delete, and this project. This project doesn't do very much in terms of it just goes through and creates a simple login dialog box. So don't worry about what it actually creates. But the point is, here's the build file for it. And it is the simplest build file possible. What I'm getting is doing not much more than hitting the green button. But I just want to point out that Ant works exactly the same way whether you're running from the command line or one of these tools. You can still load files in. You can also embed variables inside. You don't have to load them in separately, whatever that works for you. To actually compile Flex and ActionScript, so MXMLs and AS files, etc., you need a variety of things like MXMLC and CompC. These are actually stored in flextasks.jar. It's in your SDK. So if you actually look inside your Flex SDK, so Flex SDK 4.5, there's an Ant folder. Inside there will be the required files. Some people actually copy the file to the project because, obviously, if you're pointing to a version 3 SDK, it won't work with a 4.5. So you've got to... Some people actually find it easier to move it, say, into an Ant folder and point to that instead, like I've done here. That's just a convenience thing. So what happens when I run this particular Ant file? It just says, okay, look in the source directory. This is all coming out of properties. Look in the source directory for main MXML. Output it as a... scroll across, sorry. Hang on, it's better to do this. Yep. Export as a Swift. Locale's English, US. I'm not doing anything tricky there. Load some libraries in. I don't want a debug version. I want the final build. That sort of thing. Run that, and it's complete. So if I go back to here, all I have to do is, within Flash Builder, bring up the Ant view. If it's not visible, Window, Views, Other, A-N-T. There it is. Done. And just drag the build file into there. The advantage, by the way, of using Ant within Flash Builder or these tools, you get code complete help when writing this stuff. So there is the build, project build. I want to run it. There's a variety of targets. It says one target. It shows up there. Click on that, hit run. There I go. And it should be running. And if you can see the stuff down the bottom, it's actually compiling the file, loading the library.
That's NinjaCat.
And I'm not going to show the code because it just takes too long. I'm just going to demonstrate the end result. Okay, if I go into the second project, there is a source folder, there it is. I'm just going to run it. wants to run. Okay, nothing special, and ignore the molehill stuff, it's the browser I've got chosen. The bit I want to show is this. Notice it's got the version in there. Who here keeps forgetting to update their versions? They'd rather keep it up to date. It should be an easy task, but it's not always. Okay, nice simple way of doing it. Back in here, I go in and there is, in the ANT folder, well, there's the version file. It's just nice and simple. Give me that value back. But I keep forgetting to update that value. In here, same file with a slight modification to it. A little string I can look up. Within the ANT task itself, I'm just going to make that full screen. Keep it nice and simple. It, when I run it, it checks the code into Subversion. It then gets the latest version that was checked in. It copies that sample file, template file, over the top, overwrite of the AS file, updates that value with whatever the latest version is, and then compiles the project. So I think it was, what was it, version 2.4? Yep, 1.2.4. If I now go back and run this script again, so let me just make sure it's in there. It is, good. Going to compile project, run that. Checking it in, updating it, doing the work to update the file, building it, great. Let me just double check in here. In my source, there's that version file. It's now 1.2.5. It's gone to the repository, pulled that latest value back. You know, you could build that number up however you want, but you can just do it automatically. All right, so that's ANT. And I'm running time. PowerPoint. Okay, so ANT Flex, Jenkins. Okay, quickly, who's heard of Hudson? Okay, so those who don't, Hudson's a continuous integration server. All it basically is just an event watcher. Okay, it just watches for certain things to occur and runs tasks. And in most cases, those tasks are written in ANT or Maven, which are just two different ways of scripting the process. So I could say, you know what, watch that Subversion repository and maybe poll it every 15 minutes, just keep an eye on it. Does it change? If it does, then instead of running that ANT file in Flash Builder, run it on the server. And as part of that, I can say, you know what, if you worked properly, I want you then to FTP those files up to the main server. So I can go through and actually automate the process. Now, why Jenkins? Besides Oracle now owning MySQL and Java, they have rights to the name Hudson, but not the code base, from what I understand. So the people who actually own the code base have said, we've got to come to a new name. Jeeves is gone. So let's go with Jenkins, like a butler sort of thing. It's the guy sitting there waiting to do your bidding. So it's now called Jenkins. The important thing to note is if you go Googling for some help with Jenkins and can't find it, just Google the same question with Hudson. You'll probably find the answer. Okay, it's just, you know, until the community kind of as a whole moves across, and just don't ever mention Hudson around Kai because he snaps at you. All right, I did that a few times. Oops, gone too far. Okay, so this is just a really quick example of this. Now, the reason I had to do Confluence first was that the demo for Confluence steals port 8080 and you can't change it for the demo. Exit. Yep, so let's shut it down. Let's give it a moment to compose itself. All right, that's still an administrator, yep. Okay, to get Jenkins or Hudson, you can actually get both. To get them, you just go to the website. It's hudson-ci.org or jenkins-ci.org. CI is continuous integration. I'm doing a really simple version here. You download a WAR file, and as long as you have Java installed, remember that Java home stuff I showed you before? You have Java installed, you just write a command to say, run that particular file. So in here, let me just, wrong one. Let's go back up and in. There we go. So there is the WAR file. One of the great things about it actually will back up and upgrade itself. If you're running even this version here, which is pretty much a standalone run when I need it version, if it sees an update, it'll prompt you and it'll patch itself. So you don't have to download a new version. It'll actually go through and run that. In the case here of the batch file, it's just, I said, run java-jar Jenkins. So just tell it to run that file. All right, so I'll just do that right now and have it up and running. I noticed a couple of command line errors before, but I'm not going to stress about them, so I'll just read those running. So cd aut tab. Oops, wrong tab, that one. And start Jenkins. And the good thing is, if you actually have Hudson set up already and you're deploying the WAR file, I've actually found by just bringing the Jenkins across, it actually picks up all your settings and whatever else. So it's actually really convenient if you do move across to the new version. And it is a new version. The version numbers are higher in Jenkins. Okay, it's running. So I go to my browser and localhost 8080, and I'm hoping that Confluence has given it back to me now. There it is. There is Jenkins. And here is the console. I'm just going to do a brand new job because to show you how easy it is. Okay, new job. So, build Google, was it? All right, it's a freestyle project. In other words, it's basically just freeform and you need to do some things. Let's hit OK. All right, now here's the scary bit. We look at this, but actually is once you get a handle on what it does and read the little help all the way through, it makes sense. I'll give a description of what it does. Whatever. Okay, so in this case, I want to tie it into source control. Subversion, there it is. Okay, where's my repository? Well, remember before I had this up and running? I think it's actually shut down now, is it? No, there it is. Okay, so there's the repository, and just copy that if I need to, and put that into there. That's already in memory anyway. Okay, any other options? Okay, so that's it. Subversion, where to find it, that's done. Obviously, there might be some other stuff about passwords and the like, but you can deal with that later on if you have to. Okay, how does it build? Remember, it's an event engine. It just watches things. So, okay, poll the source content system, and I want to say, poll it every 5 minutes, no hours, no days, no weeks. No. So you can go through, and there's a whole variety of ways you can write the polling mechanism, and again, help. It's right there. All right, last thing I want to do here is I want to add a build step. Remember, this project has an ant script in it. So all I do is say, I want to invoke ant. And that already had a target in there. If you actually looked at my code, you could see it before. That was one of the targets in there. I'm just calling that target. And you can actually, you can daisy chain them and have triggers and the like. And you can do more than one. Run this ANT script, that one does, then run that one, that type of thing. All right. And just a final thing, I'm not going to do right now, in terms of time, but I could say do things like publish this to, where the heck is it? There was an FTP option here, and I can't see. Oh, there it is, right at the bottom. I can say, once you finish, just publish everything to FTP. Yeah, cool, okay. Or upload it, or email me. Tell me it's done. Tell me it failed. That sort of thing. So I can go through and do post actions, but all I want to do is make sure this thing runs. So I've done three things. So I've given it, four, a name, repository, timing, and a job to do. That's it. Save. Now, I could just sit and wait 5 minutes. I'm not going to because of the time. Or I could say, you know what, hey, build this right now. It's checking the code out of Subversion. It's running the ANT script. And once it finishes, it would do whatever tasks I tell it to on completion. Put it up to my web server. So again, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, lazy is hard work, but if you get this stuff in place, I don't have to think about it. Every night at 11:30 p.m., it just puts new copies of all my... It takes all my code, takes the team's code, compiles it, checks it, runs unit testing across it, does whatever you need to have happen to it, publishes it to the server. You don't have to have someone log in at 11:30 p.m. and just do it. You can just automate those things. All right, so, okay, that's failed for some reason. I'm not going to work out why. Let me just have a quick look. So, okay, yep, it checked it out, did that. Oh, yeah, this one had a problem finding the script. So just here, if I go back a second, this other job here, the WebView demo, actually knows where the script is, I believe. So I build that one instead. You can see it's going through. And what you'll find is you'll just have a whole stack of these. It'll just keep building, by the way. Even sometimes I found it builds even if there is no are no changes. Depends on how you set up your watches and events. Okay, blue, it worked. Don't know why it's green, it's blue. So in here, that's the latest job. I can see, did it work? So there's the output, yep. Checked it out of Subversion. It went through, it compiled it. Remember that when I ran the ANT script in Flash Builder? That's the same output, because it just did the same thing, but remotely. No need to have Flash Builder on the server, it's just running as a command prompt, and it took 10 seconds to do. So that's about it. Just one thing here. Nope, that's it. Cool. So as I said, these are just to wet your whistle and get you understand what's going on. So let me just bring up that last slide if anyone wants to jot down those details. And PowerPoint, just there it is. Okay, first of all, just my details quickly. Best way to get me, richard@qmug.net or @richard-tj. Don't lose the hyphen. It's a really weird Twitter person. So richard_tj. And these will be up available, as I said, next week. And I'll put those details back up. As I said, the Jenkins, Lassian for the Confluence, the regular expressions, and the Java Ant. All these links will be in my notes. All right, sorry it was rushed, but I hope you got something out of it. You could see potential in even just picking a bit of that code and playing around with it. And thank you.